orange pill bottles. "These are your seizure medications," he says. "We have you on once-a-day medications because getting you to take them in the morning was impossible. I mean, I don't blame you. You usually have no idea what's going on in the morning, and you're not eager to swallow a bunch of pills." I take the bottle of pills from him. My name and the name of the drug are written on the bottle, and underneath, in smaller letters, "For seizures," there's a doctor's name and prescribing number.
"You can call the pharmacy if you want," he says. "I'm telling you the truth, and here."
He takes his phone out of his pocket, types something in, then hands it to me. It's the website from Mount Sinai with a photograph of the doctor whose name is on my prescription bottle. Dr. Leonard Sawinski.
"That's your neurologist. He's not a quack. He's the chairman of the whole department."
I look in the bottle of pills. It's about half full of large capsules. They would be easy to break open and pour into a glass of water.
"They make you pretty groggy, though," he says apologetically. "Usually you just want to go straight to sleep after you've had them. But sometimes you realize I slipped you something and freak out."
Is that what happened last night? I thought he slipped me something and wrote the note to myself.
"I don't know why Harry keeps bothering you," he sighs. Maybe he believes he's doing the right thing. Or he's still in love with you. But I'm the one taking care of you. I'm your husband. I'm just trying to do what's right. It's hard.
Graham's head drops down. He almost looks like he's going to start crying, and I realize at this moment that I believe him. These are real medications, prescribed by a respected physician.
"Tess."
There's a groove between his eyebrows.
"Say something."
I look into the bottle of pills again. "I don't know. I'm not sure." He squeezes his hands together.
"I'm not going to force you, okay? But I want you to take these pills. I'm scared about you having another seizure. Dr. Sawinski said if you have another bleed in your brain, it might affect your ability to walk or speak."
I close my eyes. I remember how panicked I was this morning when I woke up and realized nothing was the way I remembered it. What if I woke up and couldn't speak? What if I woke up and one side of my body didn't work anymore? This is bad, but it could be worse. When I open my eyes again, Graham is still standing there, patiently, waiting to see what I'll decide. "Okay," I say. "I'll take the pills." Day 3. Chapter 27. If you relax and try to have a good day, you will be much happier. Just remember that the people around you care about you very much and only want you to be safe. Do what they say. You are in good hands. Trust me. I repeat my own words to myself like a mantra as I sit in my palace of a kitchen, watching my handsome husband, who I've never met before, make me breakfast. This kitchen is unbelievable. I just wish I could remember how my kitchen got this way and how I got this way. I smell something burning on the stove while Graham takes a call on his phone. He obviously smells it too because he rushes over to turn off the stove. I'm worried it's too late, though.
"It's just a tiny bit burned,"
Graham assures me as he ends his call and tosses his phone on the counter.
"It still tastes good."
That's yet to be seen. Do I have a phone? Graham hesitates a beat.
"No, I'm sorry. You couldn't figure out how to use it and you kept losing it."
"Oh, I've had a phone since college and it feels weird not to have one, although it was nowhere near as fancy as Graham's phone. So what do I do if I want to call someone?" He blinks at me through his wire-rimmed spectacles.
"Who do you want to call?"
There is something in Graham's voice that makes me uneasy. Something between patronizing and suspicious. But that might be unfair. He's been nothing but kind to me since I woke up screaming when I saw him in my bed. I'm sure that's got to be hard for him. I'd like to talk to my father. Is he...
He's still alive, Graham tells me.
I let out a sigh of relief. My father is the only family I have left since breast cancer took my mother when I was a kid.
"He's on a cruise, though," he adds, "so he's pretty hard to reach by phone. We can try him later if you want."
My father is on a cruise? That's atypical behavior for him. But it's been a while. Maybe in the last decade he's turned into a cruise kind of person. What about Lucy? I ask.
You're still in touch.
I clutch my knees under the table. Can I talk to her?
Maybe later,
he says vaguely. Graham puts down two plates of food on the kitchen island where I'm sitting. As I'm staring down at the blackened hash browns and sausage, a scraping noise comes from the back door. I've heard it several times now, but the sound is clearer since the stove is off. What's that? He hesitates.
That's your dog, but we keep him outside most of the day. He chews up the whole house.
My dog? Harry and I always wanted a dog. I take a bite of the crispy hash browns. They taste bitter. What's his name?
Ziggy.
I almost choke on the burnt, shredded potato. In my defense, it's easy to do that because they are super dry. But that's not why I was choking. Ziggy was Harry's bird. Why did I name my dog after my ex-fiance's bird? That is a very, very strange thing to do. Maybe I shouldn't read too much into this. Maybe it's just a coincidence. Graham, I say. He looks up from his plate.
Yes?
Do we have children?
Do you see any children in this house?
No, but I attempt to stab a piece of sausage with my fork. It's been overcooked so badly, it's shriveled. I always wanted kids. I would have thought, if we're married. He chews on a bite of his sausage.
We tried to have kids, but the doctor said you were infertile.
I suck in a breath. Oh, but aren't there treatments for infertility? He lifts a shoulder.
You know how you are. You are always scared of going to the doctor because of what happened with your mom, and you're terrified of needles, so we decided not to do IVF. You said it was fine, just the two of us.
Oh. Of course, I knew we didn't have children. It was fairly obvious. But to find out that we couldn't, that we would never. But does it matter? It's not like I'm in any shape to take care of a child like I am now. It's a blessing we never ended up having kids. Graham goes to the refrigerator and opens up the door. He pulls out a container of blood-red liquid. I watch in fascination as he pours a heaping glass of it. What's that? I ask.
Pomegranate juice.
He deposits the glass on the table.
You love this stuff. You drink like two glasses of it every morning.
I do? The drink in front of me looks utterly unappealing. Are you sure? He winks at me.
Which one of us has memory loss? Trust me, this is your favorite thing in the whole world.
No, thanks. I'd just like a cup of coffee.
Come on. You don't want your favorite drink?
I press my fingertips against the glass, pushing it several inches away from me. Just coffee, please.
Fine, he grumbles.
Graham stomps across the kitchen to the fancy coffee machine that has more control buttons than our shower. He gets the coffee brewing, and I make a point of pushing that awful drink he poured me a few more inches away from me. That looks awful. I don't even want it near me. Graham returns to the kitchen island. His eyes stray down to the glass of red liquid.
You really don't want it?
No, thanks.
It's expensive, you know.
I don't know what to say. Based on the appearance of this house, we can afford to waste a glass of juice. You can have it if you want. Graham grumbles to himself as he swipes the full glass of pomegranate juice off the table and pours the contents into the sink, staining the bottom of the sink a deep red color. My stomach turns at the sight of it. Then he slams the glass down on the kitchen counter. I don't know why he's acting this way. I didn't do anything that horrible. I just refused a glass of juice. Why is he throwing a tantrum? This doesn't seem like normal behavior. The letter I wrote to myself says he's a good guy. He's my husband. But I don't trust him. Chapter 28. All morning, I've been sitting on the sofa, flipping through the channels on the television, feeling increasingly claustrophobic. I would love to go outside and take a walk, but Graham made it clear this morning that I couldn't go outside alone. He said it wasn't safe. That woman Camila is upstairs doing God knows what. Supposedly, she's cleaning, but I haven't heard any vacuum noises or running water. Something about Camila makes me uneasy. I don't quite trust anyone. It's obvious from the scar on my head that there's some grain of truth to the car accident story, but it feels like there's something I am missing, a missing piece of the puzzle. To hell with Graham's warnings. I'm going to take a walk. I'm already wearing a pair of sneakers I found in the closet, so I head straight for the front door. I'll just walk around the block. Nothing bad is going to happen if I do that. I'll probably be back home before Camila even notices I'm gone. I reach out to turn the lock, the same way I did when I left the house yesterday to go to work. Well, it wasn't really yesterday. It was 7 years ago, but it feels like yesterday. In any case, the lock looks different than it did the last time I remember. Instead of the dial that I used to turn to unlock the door, now there's a keyhole. Oh my God, the door is locked from the inside. Pushing back a surge of panic, I make a beeline for the back door. I can hear my dog, Ziggy, barking from the backyard, but I can't get to him, because there is a lock on the back door as well. I slam my palm against the back door in frustration. Are they kidding me? How could they lock me in here? I mean, yes, I was trying to leave without permission, but for God's sake, I'm an adult. I wasn't going to do anything dangerous. I was just going to take a walk around the block. And I still can. There are other ways to get out of this house. They can't keep me prisoner here. I return to the front door, my hands shaking. There are two picture windows on either side of the door. I might not be quite as nimble now that I'm 36 instead of 29, but I think I can climb out of a first-story window. I have to try anyway. I grab onto the grooves at the bottom of one of the two windows. I yank upwards, but the window doesn't budge. Not even a centimeter, even when I throw all my weight into it. That's when I notice there's a switch at the base of this window as well, keeping it locked. I try to turn it, and that's when I discover that the window lock has a keyhole on it also. The blood is rushing in my ears as I go from window to window, confirming that each and every window has an identical keyhole in the lock. It takes me less than 5 minutes to verify that all the windows and doors on the first floor of this house are locked from the inside. I'm trapped here. I stand in the middle of the living room, the panic rising in my chest. I feel almost dizzy. It wasn't so bad when I was just sitting on the couch and watching television, but now that I know I can't leave even if I wanted, this can't be legal. You can't keep a person hostage in their own home. I don't care if I have a brain injury. This isn't right. But who can I tell? I've been through the entire house and I can't find a working phone. No wonder Graham refused to give me a phone this morning, and Camila won't be sympathetic to my plight. He's paid her to be here. A noise at the front door gets my attention. I swivel my head in the direction of the door just as a few letters slide through the mail slot. As the letters clatter onto the welcome mat, my heart leaps. The mailman! I race to one of the picture windows just in time to see a middle-aged man wearing a postal worker uniform with a blue baseball cap on his head, trudging down our front walk, dragging along his mail cart behind him. It's not Sid, the mailman who used to deliver our mail when it was me and Harry living here. It's a new guy I don't recognize. But that's okay. He's a government employee. He has to help me. The mailman isn't looking my way, so I bang a fist against the window as hard as I can. He still doesn't turn. So I bang both fists against the window, trying desperately to get his attention. The mailman stops. He tilts his head to the side. Then he turns around. He spots me standing there, and I wave both hands over my head. He waves back, then turns around and continues on his way. No, no! I bang my hands against the window again, but the mailman doesn't turn again. What is wrong with this guy? Can't he see I'm in distress? I slam my fists against the window so hard the frame rattles. Help! I scream, knowing it's unlikely he'll hear me through the thick window pane. Help me, please! But he doesn't turn. He continues on his way, moving farther and farther away from my house, wrecking any chance that he'll be able to save me. Help! I scream one more time. Please! How did this happen to me? The last thing I remember, I was living in this house, engaged to the man I loved, and running a successful business. And now, this. Something has gone horribly wrong. I need to figure out a way to get out of here. Maybe if I make a sign, I can get the attention of someone on the street and... Tess? Camila is standing by the sofa, staring at me. That's when I realize tears are streaking down my face and my shoulders are shaking with sobs.
I'm crying so hard I can hardly catch my breath. "Please help me," I gasp. "Please, I need my life back."
Camila is quiet for a moment. I can see the pity on her face. I wonder how much she gets paid to babysit me. She's so beautiful. She could be a movie star if she wanted. Or a pop star. I'm sure my husband notices how beautiful she is. I wonder if that's how she got the job. I want to tell Camila to stay away from me, but it's obvious she has other ideas in her head. After a beat of hesitation, she crosses the room to the window and comes right up to me. And before I can stop her, she wraps her arms around me. For a moment, I am completely rigid. But gradually, I feel myself melt. I can't help it. Even though she is a stranger, there is something comforting about the way she holds me. Something familiar. I sob into her shoulder and her hand rubs my back. "It's okay, Tess," she murmurs. "You're going to be okay. I promise. I'm here. It's okay."
"It's not."
Snot from my nose stains her shirt, and she doesn't seem to be the slightest bit bothered.
"It's not okay. I miss my life. I miss Harry. Please."
Her hand moves in wide circles on my back. My mother used to do that when I was a kid and I was upset about something. She used to hold me and rub circles on my back with her palm. After she died, I never quite felt that anyone could comfort me the way she could, even Harry. But as Camila holds me and rubs my back, it's like I'm a child again, and maybe everything is going to be okay. "You're going to be okay," she says again. "I know it can be scary not to remember anything, but I promise you, you're going to calm down. And also, I have a surprise for you." I pull away from her, wiping my swollen eyes with the back of my hands.
"A surprise?"
She smiles at me. "Lucy is visiting this afternoon." For the first time since I woke up this morning, I feel a seed of happiness. Lucy is coming. My best friend is going to visit me. And I might not trust my husband, but I can trust Lucy. She would never do anything to hurt me. Chapter 29. At just after 3, the doorbell rings. I've been sitting on the couch most of the afternoon with Ziggy. After my meltdown this morning, Camila took me and Ziggy on a walk around the neighborhood. I was already feeling better after finding out that Lucy would be visiting, but the fresh air did wonders. After a walk around the block with my dog, I didn't feel as much like a prisoner anymore. And now, Ziggy is sitting next to me on the couch, his chin on my lap as I stroke his head absently. I don't feel like doing much. After all, what can I do? I can't start reading a book because if I don't finish it by the end of the evening, I'll have forgotten everything about it. I mentioned to Camila that I might want to try cooking something for dinner, but she acted like I might burn the whole house down if I tried to do it alone. The only way she would consent to it is if she were with me the whole time. And that brings me back to the issue of the doorbell. I can't open the door because of that pesky lock. Even though I know my best friend is on the other side of the door, and I desperately want to see her. "Camila!" I call out. Camila sprints down the stairs, wiping her hands on her skin-tight blue jeans. "What's up, Tess? Can you open the door?" I ask her. Camila digs around in the pocket of her jeans for a set of keys. She fits them in the lock to the front door. When I see Lucy's familiar face, I almost burst into tears. I run over to her and throw my arms around her. I can't stop hugging her. And then I really am crying. I'm quite the waterfall today.
"Lucy," I sob. "It's been the worst day ever."
I take a step back to look at my gorgeous best friend. Like her eponymous namesake in I Love Lucy, Lucy has shockingly red hair. It's her signature color. She had more freckles in college, but she's careful about staying out of the sun, so they've faded. But if you squint at her face, you can still see the pale dots all over her skin. And if she goes in the sun, forget it. Freckle City. Lucy and I met on our first day of college. I had been nervous about leaving home for the first time, and my father's lack of emotion over this momentous event didn't make me feel any better. But Lucy was the opposite. The second I walked into the room we were assigned to share, with the matching beds and dressers at either side, she ran over to me and enveloped me in a big hug.
"I'm so excited we're roommates!"
And I was excited too.
It was wonderful to live with somebody who I could laugh with, have fun with, and even occasionally study with. Very occasionally. Neither of us were stellar students. Okay, Lucy isn't perfect. Like, if you meet her for lunch or coffee, she's guaranteed to be anywhere from 15 to 30 minutes late, and occasionally 45 minutes to an hour late. And she never believed in me when I mentioned starting up my company. But in her defense, she was just trying to protect me from what she believed was a bad business venture. It's not her fault she was dead wrong. Lucy looks fantastic today. Her red hair is glossy, she has maintained her trim figure, and the eyeliner she's wearing makes her eyes pop. Harry used to sometimes make comments about the amount of makeup she always wore, which always stood out in comparison to my bare face. "Do you think she owns stock in a cosmetics company?" he'd say, just before I would elbow him in the ribs. The fact that Lucy looks like somebody who came right out of the pages of the fashion magazine makes me feel all the more self-conscious about my own appearance. I smooth out my too short hair and my fingers linger on the scar as I wonder if it's visible to her.
"Tess, sweetie," she grabs my shoulders tightly. "You look so pale. What's going on?"
I wipe my eyes with the back of my hand, gulping for air. "Can we sit down?" Ziggy has vacated the sofa to make room for Lucy. I don't understand what Graham was talking about when he said Ziggy chews up the furniture. Ziggy is like the most well-behaved dog ever. Sometimes I feel like he knows me better than anyone else in this house. He certainly wouldn't have offered me pomegranate juice to drink. Lucy ruffles Ziggy's fur and he licks her hand.
"I just don't understand how this happened to me."
I touch the scar on my scalp again. It feels so strange, like it's not quite my skin.
"I know there was a car accident."
Lucy crosses her legs and I notice her shoes. Manolo Blahnik. She's always wanted a pair of those.
"Yes, last year, and ever since then, you've been having so much trouble with your memory. Graham has had to take over at my home spa, and I've been stepping up as much as I can."
"So, it's like this every morning? I've forgotten everything from the day before?"
"Usually."
She picks at a thread on her designer slacks.
"You have better days sometimes, but the last month has been rough. Before that, you seemed happy most of the time when I saw you, but now you're always crying, and you seem..."
I lift my eyebrows.
"I seem what?" "Scared. You always seem scared of something."
She isn't wrong, but who wouldn't be scared in this situation? Every morning I wake up next to a stranger, in my own bed, in his underwear.
"Lucy," I say, "what happened to Harry?"
She frowns.
"That's another thing. Every time we talk, you ask me about Harry. You used to just occasionally ask about him, but now it's like you're desperate to see him every day."
My eyes fill with tears again.
"The last thing I remember is him getting down on one knee and proposing to me."
A smile twitches at Lucy's lips.
"Right, the keyboard proposal. That was, cute.
It was so romantic.
It was signature dorky Harry." She rolls her eyes. "If that's what you like."
"Harry and I are supposed to be married by now," I sniffle loudly. "If I woke up next to him every morning, I could deal with all this. But Graham?
Graham is nice."
She sounds almost exasperated. I wonder how many times she's had this conversation with me.
"He's a good guy. So much better for you than Harry."
Maybe. But as she says those words, something flashes in my head. Something about Graham. But I can't quite grab onto it. My memory has become so frustrating.
"He cares about you a lot, Tess."
She lowers her voice a notch.
"Also, he's really handsome, don't you think so?"
I guess so. Yes, Graham is attractive. But when I look at him, I feel nothing. In my head, I'm engaged to someone else. Someone I love. So even though Graham is nice and he's handsome, he's not Harry. I nod miserably. Lucy crosses her legs.
"Has Harry tried to contact you at all? Like on your phone?"
"What do you mean?" She glances around as if checking to see if somebody is listening in.
"Like, has he sent you any text messages or tried to call you?"
"I don't have a phone, so..." Lucy frowned. You don't? Graham pointed out that I would probably lose it, and he let me use his. He gave me my father's number this morning, and I tried to call him. Yes, but... Lucy starts to say something, but abruptly stops. She chews on her lip, looking across the sofa at me. Graham didn't give you a phone to use this morning? No. My stomach sinks. Are you saying that he usually gives me a phone? She hesitates. No, not at all. That's not what I'm saying. But Lucy is a terrible liar. Whenever she's lying, her whole face turns as red as her hair. I'm beginning to think that I did have a phone, and for whatever reason, Graham decided he didn't want me to have it anymore. And then that memory comes back to me. A little tiny snippet of Harry's voice whispering in my ear. Graham has a desk upstairs. There's a drawer that's always locked, and you said you think that's where he's keeping whatever he's giving you. My head snaps back, shaken by the memory that just came back to me. Is that real? Or is it a figment of the imagination of my damaged brain? After all, the letter I wrote to myself claimed I hadn't seen Harry in years. But it felt like a real memory. It's the first memory I've had today that has felt real. That has to mean something. Lucy, does Graham have an office upstairs? I ask. Yeah, he does. I lean back against the couch, not sure what to think. Is there something upstairs locked in Graham's desk drawer that I should know about? If so, what? Is there a reason I keep losing my memory every night beyond my head injury? No, it can't be. My husband isn't drugging me. I can't believe that could be true. Could it? Chapter 30. The weather is beautiful, so Lucy and I decide to walk Ziggy around the neighborhood. I feel a bit self-conscious in my jeans and sweater next to Lucy, in her creamy silk blouse and pencil skirt that's just a bit too short. But it's not like anybody is going to be staring at us. Anyway, I would feel ridiculous walking the dog in what she's wearing. Ziggy is such a good dog, Lucy comments as he bounds ahead of us, overjoyed to be outside. I feel the same way. That house is so stifling. He's so good for you. When did I get him? I love Ziggy so much, it feels hard to believe that I haven't owned him my whole life. About a year ago, around when you got hurt. She pats her red hair. Ziggy, interesting name for a dog. I keep my eyes ahead of me, avoiding Lucy's gaze. Did she know the name of Harry's bird? I have no idea. I love the comic strip. Do you? There's a note of skepticism in her voice, and my stomach flips. But then she laughs. I suppose comic strips are the easiest thing for you to read these days, since they're so short. We walk in silence after that, only broken by Ziggy panting and Lucy's heels clacking against the sidewalk. My sneakers don't make a sound. We reach the park a few blocks from my house and start doing a lap around it. Honestly, Lucy says, this isn't so bad, Tess. You have a good life, despite everything. I bite the inside of my cheek. I don't know how she could say something like that. Nobody would want to trade places with me. I do not have a good life. Not anymore. I mean, look at you, she goes on. You get to hang out all day in a pair of comfy jeans and a sweater. Graham takes care of you. You don't have to work or do anything besides watch a little TV and walk your dog. She looks pointedly at my midsection. You don't have to worry about your weight or working out. I clutch my belly self-consciously. I didn't think I had gained much weight in the last decade, although I certainly don't look as toned as Lucy does. Suddenly, I remember a comment Harry once made about Lucy. She never passes up an opportunity to put you down. Even at the time, I knew it wasn't entirely untrue, but I always shrugged it off. I'm just saying, Lucy's smile stretches the corners of her lips. Things could be way worse. You have it pretty good. Lucy, I say, I don't think. Before I can get the words out, my lips freeze. My mind goes blank. Everything around me fades and goes to white, like I've fallen into a trance. And instead of being on the street outside my house, I'm somewhere completely different. I'm in a small room, sitting on a stool, staring at my reflection in a vanity mirror. My hair is pulled back from my face except for small tendrils that fall around my cheeks, and I'm wearing a white lacy dress.
Just think, Tess.
It's Lucy's voice. I look up and she's next to me, wearing a puffy lavender frock.
In a few minutes, you're going to be walking down the aisle. You're going to be Mrs. Graham Thurman.
Yeah. I stare back at my reflection. My lips are a straight line. I don't look like a woman who is overjoyed that she's about to get married.
I just wonder if this is a mistake.
A mistake? Lucy bursts out.
How could you say that? Graham is wonderful. If I knew what a great guy he was, believe me, I wouldn't have turned him down when he asked me out.
I grimace. This isn't the first time Lucy has reminded me that she was Graham's first choice. Of course, I was with Harry back then. Engaged. I had thought Harry would be the one I'd be joining hands with after walking down the aisle. The thought of it being anyone but him fills me with overwhelming panic. I know I told him I never wanted to see him again, but I'm worried I've made a horrible mistake.
I want to call Harry, I blurt out, right now.
Lucy's eyes fly wide open.
You're joking. You're really still having feelings for him after what he did to me? After the way he betrayed you?
Lucy, where's my phone? My fingers fly over the vanity table, reaching for it. I need to talk to him. Before I can reach my phone, Lucy snatches it up, holding it out of my reach.
No, I'm not going to let you mess this up for yourself. You can't call Harry. I won't let you make the biggest mistake of your life.
Before I can hear my reply, the dressing room fades away to white, and suddenly I'm back on the street again, my fingers wrapped around Ziggy's leash. Lucy is next to me, back in her work clothes rather than the purple frock, and she's shaking my shoulder.
Tess! Her green eyes are wide. Tess, are you okay?
I blink at her. I open my mouth, but it takes another few seconds for me to get out any words.
What happened? You just...
Lucy chews on her lower lip.
You zoned out for like 10 seconds. I think it was a seizure.
I almost drop Ziggy's leash.
A seizure? You have them sometimes.
She shrugs like me having a seizure is no big deal.
I would have thought you just zoned out a bit, but you had one once while Graham was around, and he told me that's what it was.
Does this happen to me a lot? She nods.
A fair amount, but I've never seen it happen to you while we were walking. Are you okay?
I feel dizzy, but otherwise not too bad. But then I attempt to take a step and my knees wobble.
Maybe we should head home.
Of course, she rubs my shoulder.
Let's get you home right away.
As we continue our circle around the park in the direction of my house, I notice that the park has a dog park inside of it. As I look at the dog park, I get this strange feeling, like a snapshot of a memory. Did something happen inside that dog park?
Lucy, I say. Do I ever take Ziggy to the dog park?
Her brow wrinkles.
I think so. Why?
I stare at that dog park, imagining Ziggy bounding through the dirt on the ground. Something happened in this dog park, but I can't quite retrieve the memory. It's so frustrating. The last thing I remember before this morning was going to sleep next to Harry. But that was years ago. Nearly a decade of memories have somehow just vanished.
But have they vanished? Or are they just below the surface, waiting to be retrieved?
Chapter 31. Lucy decides to stay for dinner. Camila has made us steaks with a side of mashed potatoes and asparagus. Graham and I are seated across from each other, and Lucy is between us at the head of the table.
Graham, Lucy says, did you have a chance to see the Ivory Castle?
Graham's eyes light up.
I did. It was great, wasn't it? A haunting performance by Higgins.
I slice into the filet mignon Camila has placed on my plate. She said that they were cooked medium rare, but as the butter knife slices through the meat, it looks much closer to rare. It's outright bloody. But Lucy and Graham don't seem bothered by it. Maybe Graham likes his steak rare. How would I know? This morning I couldn't have even told you his name.
I thought Charlie Devine was amazing as Roger, Lucy says. He is such a great actor.
It's a shame about his personal life, Graham says.
Lucy giggles. Do you believe those rumors?
Hard not to. The two of them chatter on about this actor, Charlie Devine, who I never even heard of, and some rumor about him and some other actress I also never heard of. I don't have any hope of participating in this conversation, so I mostly focus on eating my mashed potatoes and asparagus, and also eating the part of my steak that isn't still mooing, mostly the edges.
Camila is a gem, Lucy comments as she nibbles on a stalk of asparagus. Every time I've eaten here, I feel like I'm at a Michelin star restaurant.
I know. Graham sips from the glass of wine he poured for himself. He's the only one drinking alcohol. Lucy and I are just having water. She is worth her weight in gold. Don't you think so, Tess?
Those are the first words he's said to me since I sat down, and he's only including me to be nice. How would I know how good Camila is? I just met her this morning.
Yes.
If not for her, Graham continues, Tess probably would have set the house on fire by now.
Lucy laughs, but I don't appreciate the joke. No, I wouldn't, I protest. Graham chuckles.
Come on.
What is that supposed to mean? I shoot back. I would be fine by myself here all day. I wouldn't set fire to anything. I would be fine.
Right. Sure, you'd be fine.
I don't appreciate the sarcasm in his voice. What do you think I'm going to do? I might not remember yesterday, but I know how to work a stove. I know how to walk Ziggy around the block. You really think I can't be by myself?
No, Graham says patiently. I don't think that you can't be by yourself. I know you can't be by yourself.
I look over at Lucy for help. She has made herself busy spearing one of the chunks of steak that has been shredded by the butter knife. Presumably, I am not to be trusted around steak knives. Lucy, I say. You spent the entire afternoon with me. Do you think I would do something dangerous? Lucy sighs and puts down her fork. She reaches for my hand across the table. Tess, she says, what's the difference, really? Camila is amazing. Is it so horrible to have her around? I think about the locks on the front and back doors, the ones trapping me inside my own house. Then I think about the 10 seconds when I was walking Ziggy, and my brain shut down and went to a completely different place. A seizure. My skin starts to crawl, and I snatch my hand out from underneath Lucy's.
This wine is unbelievable.
Graham swishes the red wine around in his glass, apparently done with this line of conversation.
I got it at Martha's Vineyard.
I think of the Cabernet, which was the last wine I remember drinking before this happened to me. It was the most expensive bottle of wine I'd ever had, but I suspect it was far cheaper than whatever Graham is drinking now.
It has an earthy aroma, almost smoky, he says, and it has a soft, smooth mouthfeel.
What the hell is a mouthfeel? Doesn't all wine feel the same in your mouth? I mean, they are liquids. I wish Harry were here. He would be poking me and whispering jokes about Graham in my ear and laughing about mouthfeel.
It's delicious, Graham says.
Lucy reaches over and picks up his glass of wine. She takes a sip. It is a bit smoky. Not bad. They share a look, and my stomach turns cold. That whole exchange was strange. She just picked up his glass of wine and drank from it like nothing. You don't do that with somebody unless you know them very, very well. Is it possible something is going on between Lucy and Graham? No. Not possible. I have no idea what Graham is capable of, but Lucy would never do that to me. I try to push my suspicions out of my head. I reach for Graham's wine glass. Let me try. Before I can wrap my fingers around it, he snatches the glass away from me.
Sorry, Tess. No alcohol for you with your brain injury. Could be dangerous.
What's it going to do? I say. Wipe out my memory? Oh, wait. I look over at Graham, who is raising his eyebrows at me. That's when I notice that my speech has become slurred. I reach for my water glass and take a gulp of the liquid. My head is starting to feel foggy, much worse than earlier in the day.
Tess?
His eyebrows knit together.
You getting tired? Time for bed?
I'm fine, I try to say, but my words are still slurred. Oh God, what is happening to me? Just a little tired. Lucy's chair scrapes back against the floor. I should get going anyway. It's getting late. She reaches for my hand again and gives it a squeeze. It was so good seeing you today, Tess. I still have about half of my steak left on my plate, but I'm too tired to even contemplate the effort of trying to slice and chew that bloody thing. Graham helps me out of my chair, and he leads me in the direction of the stairwell. I try to lift my leg to climb the stairs, but it feels impossible. My legs feel like they weigh 1,000 pounds.
Come on, Tess, Graham says. Up you go.
I don't know if I was able to do it last night, but I can't do it tonight. After a few tries, Graham puts his arm under my legs and hefts me in his strong arms. He carries me up the stairs and down the hall to our bedroom. He deposits me gently on our queen-size bed. It's almost sweet and romantic until he comments,
"So you really think you're totally independent, huh?"
He's being a smartass, but I don't have the energy to reply. He rummages around in my drawer and pulls out a nightshirt. He helps me take off my sweater and put on the nightshirt. Then I shimmy out of my jeans. The effort it takes me is almost superhuman. I end up needing Graham to pull them off my feet because I can't do it on my own.
"Thank you, Graham," he says.
I try to mumble thanks, but it probably doesn't even resemble a real word. I lie down in the bed and pull the covers over me. And then I pass out. Chapter 32. I thought the next time I woke up, my world would be a blank slate, like it had been this morning. But when I wake up, the right side of my head is pounding, the clock by my bed reads 11, and the room is pitch black. And most importantly, my memory is still intact. I remember everything that happened today, from the second I woke up. I don't understand how this works. Does my memory get erased at midnight? That doesn't seem like something that could happen outside of a movie. My head still feels incredibly foggy, but something must have jolted me awake. That memory that had been tugging at me all day today. A memory of Harry speaking to me.
"Graham has a desk upstairs. There's a drawer that's always locked, and you said you think that's where he's keeping whatever he's giving you."
I sit up straight in bed. The right side of my head is still throbbing dully, and my bladder feels painfully full. I stumble out of bed to the bathroom to at least take care of one of my two discomforts. But even though I'm tired and my brain is still foggy, my thoughts won't stop racing. Graham does have an office upstairs. I passed it when I went up to grab something from my bedroom earlier. Is it possible he's keeping something from me in there? I don't know where Graham is. He wasn't in bed with me. Maybe he went out. Or maybe he's in his office right now, working. I'm never going to be able to sleep until I investigate, so I creep out of the bedroom into the hallway, which is also very dark. I can just barely make out a dim light from downstairs. Graham is downstairs, which means his office is empty. I keep one hand on the wall, feeling my way down the hallway. I stop when I get to Graham's office. I try the doorknob, and it turns under my hand. I'm about to enter the office when I hear a sound from downstairs, a crash, and then a woman giggling. What is that? I forget all about Graham's office and the stupid desk drawer. Instead, I turn around and head for the stairwell. It's still dimly lit, so I hang on to the railing. I don't want to fall and give myself another head injury. Of course, isn't there that theory that a second head bonk can be curative? Is that a thing? As I get to the bottom of the stairs, I hear it more clearly. Giggling. Two people talking softly. My husband and somebody else. Oh my God, is it Camilla? Just like when I was out walking Ziggy earlier, I get that strange sensation in my head. It must be another seizure coming on. My knees tremble as everything fades to white, and suddenly I'm not in my living room anymore. I'm outside the front door to my house. I'm getting the key into the lock for the front door and turning the knob to push it open. Except it's not the living room I have right now, with the fancy entertainment system and the leather sofa. It's my old living room with the ratty futon and the coffee table with one short leg. But that's not what my eyes focus on. Right in the middle of the room, Lucy and Harry are together. And to my horror, my best friend's lips are pressed against my fiance's. As the house key slips out of my fingers, clattering to the ground, Lucy shoves Harry off of her, hard enough that he stumbles. I can't believe my own eyes. Worse, I wouldn't have seen it if I'd come home just 5 minutes later. Harry! I cry. Lucy's hand is a blur as she reaches out and slaps Harry right across the stubble on his face. You asshole! She hisses at him. How dare you? I glare at Harry, who has a bewildered expression on his face.
Lucy, what the hell?
He grabbed me! Lucy backs away from him, her eyes wild, her hand clasped over her mouth. I'm so sorry, Tess. She shoots Harry a seething look. You bastard! Harry turns to appeal to me.
Tess, I didn't. I would never.
You would never? I shout. I just saw you do it. I spin on my heels and march out of the house, even though the keys are still on the floor of the living room. I can't even think straight. I just have to get out of here before Harry sees me burst into tears. I barely make it out the front door before a strong hand wraps around my arm.
Tess.
I try to shrug him off, but he's holding on tight. Finally, I whip my head around to face him. What? What do you have to say for yourself? Harry is standing there, a crevice between his eyebrows.
I didn't do anything. You have to believe me.
I almost laugh out loud. You didn't do anything? Are you joking? I just saw you kiss her.
I wasn't kissing her.
Harry, I saw it. He glances back at the house, then back at me.
I don't even like Lucy. You know that. Why would I kiss her?
I stick out my chin. I guess you were pretending to hate her to hide your wild attraction for her. His mouth falls open.
No, that is not even... Come on, Tess.
So explain it to me. Explain to me what I just saw.
She grabbed me. I was so shocked, I didn't even have a second to pull away.
This time I really do laugh out loud. Right, I believe that. You're saying Lucy was overcome with passion for you and tried to kiss you? His eyes cloud. He knows how everything must look. Lucy is gorgeous and men are always hitting on her. And while I find Harry incredibly attractive, he's more of an acquired taste. And so not Lucy's type.
I don't know why she did it, he finally says. I'm just telling you what happened.
Lucy materializes behind Harry, limping slightly in her always too high heels. Her eyes look swollen and her red hair is disheveled. That bastard grabbed me, Tess. I'm so sorry you had to see that. I'm sorry too, I say. I reach from my left hand to the engagement ring that I had only taken off to shower since the night he gave it to me. Harry realizes what I'm trying to do, and his eyes fly open.
Tess, no.
But there's nothing he can say. I know what I saw, despite his protests. How can I marry him after he kissed my best friend? I'll never be able to trust him again.
Tess, please.
I thought I'd be the one crying, but it's Harry's eyes that are filling with tears.
Don't do this. I love you. Let's talk about it.
I keep tugging on the ring, the one I thought I'd be wearing for the rest of my life, eventually accompanied by a plain gold band. Now I just want to get it off me. I keep pulling at it, trying to work it loose, but it's stuck. It won't come free, no matter what I do. As I pull harder, the living room fades away. It goes white. And when the white is gone, I'm back in my brand new living room again. But even though all the furnishings are different, and it's many years later, I'm seeing the same thing. In the moonlight pouring through the windows, I can make out my husband on top of another woman on our sofa, thrusting into her. What's going on here? I cry. Tess! It's the woman who calls out my name as she tries to scramble out from underneath Graham's body. You were asleep. It's Lucy, my best friend. This is the second time I have caught her with my significant other, except this time she wasn't pushing him away and slapping him across the face. She was having sex with him, right on my own couch. Graham doesn't seem as frazzled as Lucy. He looks like he probably would have finished off if she hadn't pushed him away from her. He still has his pants on, albeit at his knees, and he takes his time pulling them up and securing them. I'm so sorry. Lucy has leaped off the couch, smoothing out her skirt. She rakes a shaking hand through her red hair, which is tangled and wild around her face. This isn't what it looks like. Graham lets out a barking laugh. For once, I have to agree with him. Okay. Lucy lowers her eyes. Yes, it is what it looks like. But you have to understand, I didn't mean for this to happen. And I'm so sorry. You have no idea how sorry.
I'm sure, I snap. My best friend is sleeping with my husband. I'm sure you've got a great excuse for that one.
Lucy's eyes fill with tears.
There's no excuse. But you have to know how hard this has been on us. On me and Graham. And then when we were commiserating, it just happened.
It just happened, I repeat. And you were powerless to stop it. She wipes her eyes with the back of her hand.
It's not like that. I was just trying to help by being around for you. We both were, and then...
She looks over at Graham for support. He rolls his eyes.
Why are you bothering to explain this to her, Lucy? She'll have forgotten it in the morning anyway.
She stomps her foot on the ground like a little kid.
That's not the point. The point is...
Yes, I say through my teeth. What is the point, Lucy?
The point is...
She drops her head.
I'm sorry. I love you, Tess. You know that. I never wanted to hurt you. And,
she looks over at Graham again.
We will never do this again, I swear to you.
You kissed Harry, too, I point at the sofa. I saw you doing it, right in my own living room. Lucy jerks her head up. She didn't expect me to remember that.
Oh, well, yes, but Tess, he grabbed me. That was completely different.
Graham snorts again, louder this time. Lucy whips her head around to glare at him.
Will you shut up?
There's a smirk on his lips.
What? She's not going to remember it in the morning, like I said. You may as well fess up that the Boy Scout never really tried to kiss you.
Her eyes widen.
Shut up, Graham.
What are you whining about? You got the raise you wanted, didn't you? The private corner office.
I stare at the two of them, my heart pounding. What is he talking about? Is it possible that the scene I had walked in my living room all those years ago was all a setup? I shut my eyes for a moment and I can see the bewildered expression on Harry's face. I never even gave him a chance. I just kept picturing him kissing Lucy and I couldn't forgive him. I have made a horrible mistake.
Tess, Lucy flashes me a helpless look. I don't know what he's talking about, I swear to you.
Graham gets to his feet with a grunt. He ambles over to me and puts his hand on my shoulder.
Come on, Tess. Let's get you back to bed. You're probably exhausted.
He's right. Even with the adrenaline rush and the anger coursing through my veins, I'm almost too tired to stand. I was already feeling out of it, and the seizure has decimated me. If not for my pounding heart, I would probably collapse into a sleeping pile right on the carpet beneath me. And my bare legs feel cold from some sort of draft in the living room. I shiver. I allow Graham to lead me away, powerless to stop him. Lucy stays behind, and I wonder if they're going to finish what they started when Graham comes back downstairs. The crazy part is I don't even care. Yes, Lucy was sleeping with my husband. But I don't even know my husband. I don't love him. It's like discovering she was sleeping with a stranger. No, that's not the part I care about. What I care about is that day I caught her kissing Harry. I can't stop thinking about the possibility that it might not have been real. If I hadn't seen him kiss her, I would be married to him right now, instead of Graham. Unlike when Graham carried me up the stairs earlier, I'm able to make it up on my own 2 feet this time. But he keeps his arm on me, ready to catch me if I fall. I suppose that's worth something.
Listen, Tess, Graham watches me as I climb into bed. I'm sorry you had to see that, but you can understand, can't you?
I blink at him through the darkness. I can? He shrugs.
You don't even know me. It's not like we have any sort of a real relationship anymore.
What was Lucy talking about downstairs?
I ask him, although it's hard to form words. My tongue feels like a big lump in my mouth.
About when Harry kissed her.
Oh, right.
I can see him grinning in the darkness, his teeth glowing in the dim moonlight.
Well, it's pretty simple. I had a thing for you, so I asked Lucy if she could help me out. She never liked Harry much anyway, so it didn't take much to persuade her.
My head is spinning. Now that I've retrieved that memory of walking in on Harry and Lucy, the whole argument I had with Harry after comes rushing back to me. The way he pleaded with me, swore up and down that Lucy had been the one who grabbed him. I called him a liar, managed to wrench the ring from my finger and threw it at him, slammed the front door in his face even as he was blinking back tears.
You bastard, I manage.
I'm the bastard?
His eyes fly open wide behind his wire-rimmed glasses.
That's rich. I can't believe you would say that to me after you...
He grits his teeth and shakes his head.
Forget it. There's no point in talking about this.
My eyelids are so heavy I can barely keep them open, but I can't let this go.
What? What horrible thing did I do to you? Because I don't remember it.
What horrible thing did you do to me?
He licks his lips.
Do you have an hour or two? No, you don't. You'll probably be asleep in the next 60 seconds, so I'll skip to the best part.
He lowers his voice.
Before this happened to you, you were going to leave me. You hired a lawyer and everything. You said you couldn't stand the sight of me. You couldn't wait to get me out of your life and cut me out of your company. That's what I get for signing a goddamn prenup.
My mouth drops open. What?
That's right, he smirks at me. You had this whole plan about leaving me high and dry, and now you're stuck with me for the rest of your life, and I get to be the one in control for a change. I get to decide what you eat, what clothing you get to wear, whether you get to have a phone or not. I could even get rid of that dog of yours, and you would never even know it.
He winks at me.
Hey, maybe I will, if you don't learn to behave yourself.
I want to reach out and scratch his eyes out, but the fatigue I'm feeling is almost overwhelming, especially combined with the darkness of the room. When I lift my arm, it's like I'm moving through molasses. I don't know why I'm so tired. I don't think I've ever felt this tired in my life. Graham is standing over me, watching me struggle to keep my eyes open. And then it occurs to me. Maybe the whole reason I'm tired is that Graham has already given me a dose of whatever he's been keeping in his desk drawer. After all, he's the one who poured me that glass of water at dinner. It would have been so easy for him. I've got to do something. I've got to send myself a message with a warning. I've got to.
Day 4. Chapter 33. If you relax and try to have a good day, you will be much happier. Just remember that the people around you care about you very much and only want you to be safe. Do what they say. You are in good hands. Trust me.
Oh God, this is horrible!
I scoop water into my mouth, trying to get out the taste of the pomegranate juice. This is the most awful thing I've ever tasted. It's making me sick. I want to pick up the bottle of soap and squirt it into my mouth, because even soap would taste better than this awful juice.
I don't get it. Graham is standing next to me, frowning. Usually you love the stuff. Yesterday you drank 2 heaping glasses of it, and then you asked for a 3rd glass.
Is he joking? He has to be. There's no chance I really like this stuff, do I? But his blue eyes are wide behind his spectacles. Graham doesn't seem like a joker.
I make a special trip every week to buy it for you.
He looks hurt now.
Maybe I shouldn't anymore.
Yeah, you shouldn't.
I back away from the sink, wiping the back of my mouth with my hand.
Sorry, I don't know why I didn't like it. Maybe tomorrow will be different.
You seem off today.
He cocks his head to the side.
Maybe we should go see the doctor. They might need to do another scan of your brain. I mean, what if you need surgery again?
My hand flies to the scar on the right side of my scalp.
No, please don't. I'm fine.
My head swivels at the sound of scraping at the back door. Graham explained to me earlier that my dog is out in the backyard. Apparently, I have a dog, Ziggy.
Can I let him in?
I ask Graham.
Please?
Graham shakes his head.
No, he'll trash the furniture, but you can go out in the backyard if you want.
Of course, then I have to wait for him to unlock the back door. I can't be trusted not to wander off. When I step out into our spacious backyard, a beautiful golden retriever immediately bounds over to me. I've never believed in love at first sight. It took me months to say the L word to even Harry. But now I'm a convert. I love this dog. He licks my hand, and when I bend down, he starts licking my face. I would have thought it would gross me out, but I love it. Just being near this dog makes the low-level feeling of dread I've had since I woke up this morning subside slightly. "You're a good boy," I tell Ziggy. He licks my face. I don't know what to think about everything that's happened since I woke up next to a stranger this morning, but I can tell this dog loves me. Ziggy picks up a rubber ball with his mouth. I hold out my hand and he drops the ball into it. He wants to play. I straighten up and toss the ball across the yard. Ziggy goes crazy, running after the ball. His happiness is almost infectious.
Tess!
My ears perk up. Somebody is calling my name. Or is that a hallucination?
Tess, over here.
It's a male voice coming from behind me. I'm not hallucinating. Somebody is calling for me. I turn around, but there's nobody there. Nothing but the fence surrounding the backyard.
Tess!
The door to the fence rattles, and that's when I see the thick padlock holding the door closed.
Over here.
My stomach flip-flops as I approach the fence. When I get close enough, I can see through the gaps in the fence that a man is standing there. He's wearing a dark jacket, has a thick beard, and he's wearing a Mets cap low on his head. A pair of sunglasses conceal his eyes.
Tess,
he says, and then he takes off his sunglasses. I clasp a hand over my mouth.
Harry!
I grip the metal fence, wishing the gaps were big enough that I could reach my hand through and touch him. As it is, I can barely see him. I have to put my face so close to the fence, my nose is nearly touching it. Harry, the guy I am supposed to be married to right now, the love of my life. I don't know what the hell happened.
I needed to see if you were all right,
he says in a low voice.
You didn't answer any of my text messages yesterday.
I frown.